All right. So I'm just going to go on through the slide presentation, nutrigenomics, methylation hormones and nutrigenomics. Just as a start, I want to make sure that you understand and that when you're presenting to your patients, you clearly state this, or your clients, especially if you're teaching in group settings, that the information I'm presenting, don't let it replace the one-on-one relationship with the qualified medical professional. It's not medical advice. It's just my knowledge to you, and I just want to impart that. It's all about education, educating you to be able to educate your clients and educate them so that they can make really good choices that help them to increase their energy and feel better and better. So that's my, you know, kind of blanket disclaimer. So there's a lot of factors that will disrupt methylation, and these are related to nutrient deficiencies, like zinc and vitamin B2 and magnesium and cysteine and B6 and B12 and folate. That's a subset of the most important things. But when you have a client that's nutrient deficient, it's going to disrupt their methylation. Whether they have good genes or bad genes, it's still going to disrupt if they don't have the right nutrients, but it's going to affect them more if they have a disrupted genetic pathway. So it's really important to be doing the basics with your clients first, to really be getting them on a good diet, a nutrient-replete diet full of nutrition, full of antioxidants, and then getting them off of things that are hurting them, getting them away from the pesticides, getting them on organic foods, organic meats if they're eating meats, because those are really important pieces. If they are on medications, these can affect and disrupt methylation. So these are some of the drugs. There are lots of others. I just did a subset of those. Antacids, methotrexate, which is used for rheumatoid arthritis and cancer. Metformin, which is prescribed for insulin resistance. And we know that we can help people with this problem with insulin resistance without the medication. And there was a recent article in Jonathan Wright's newsletter that talked about head-to-head metformin versus berberine, a compound that's in golden seal and Oregon grape. Metformin was a loser all around. So people don't need to be on these drugs that are challenging their methylation pathways, but it's up to you to really be going through the basics. And one of the basics is getting their blood sugar balanced. And nitrous oxide, which is often used in the dental office for putting people out, just like making them feel happy while they get their teeth worked on. And then there's environmental toxicity, which we're all exposed to, right? And so really, the more you can clean up your client's diet, the more you can get them heavy metals out of them. If they are having mercury in their teeth, or they're eating a lot of fish that's not really carefully harvested, that they have a lot of mercury in their chemicals, like chemicals in their hair care products, in their detergents, in their lawn care products. So really educating them on the basics. So you already know these things, how to educate people on the basics, right? Excesses of nutrients. So you got to be careful with it, especially with the people that come in and say they've read everything and they're just self-medicating with all kinds of nutrients because they don't want to be on drugs. But even just simple things like DMG, dimethylglycine, CME, methylfolate even, as simple as a B vitamin, methylfolate and niacin, taking too much of that can disrupt the methylation pathway. So you've got to avoid just like reading about something and throwing it at them without understanding what's going on in their pathways. But when somebody comes in with their shopping bag full of supplements, a lot of times the hardest thing to do is to get them to stop their supplements. You might be able to get them off of gluten and dairy and sugar real easily, but to get them to trade in some of their supplements and get their level down is much more difficult. So there's genetic mutations and polymorphisms. That's what we hear. This is the whole genetics, nutrigenomics. So when they have those, of course it's going to disrupt methylation if those things are expressing. Mental state, stress, anxiety, lack of sleep, all of those things play in to methylation. Hydrogenated and oxidized fats disrupt methylation. Processed high glycemic foods like flours and sugars and grains. Charred meat, which produce heterocyclic amines. Gluten, dairy, caffeine, excess alcohol. All of these things disrupt methylation. They also disrupt hormones. So we see this tie-in when you're optimizing your person's diet for hormones, you're optimizing them in some ways for methylation. And overall, it's just good for their immune system. It's just the things that you want to start with the basics is what I want to keep reinforcing. And that's what Dr. Lynch reinforced over and over again. We can go into and look at these pathways, but it's really important that you handle the basics first. So these are some of the key genes that he pointed out we're not going to obviously teach you all about them. I'm going to show you a little bit about MTHFR. I'm going to show you a little bit of COM-T, and that's pretty much all we're going to really have time for. But I just want to show you where they fit in, and this is a detailed overview or a detailed hone-in of that chart that Michaeline did that called this. On the left-hand side is the folate leafy green cycle, and this is the homocysteine SAMe part that produces your methyl groups. And it produces ATP. ATP has to come in here. So you have to have good energy in order to process through this. Okay. So it just shows you places. So vitamin B12 is important in here. There's a gene called MTR and MTRR that recycle the B12, the MTHFR, which utilizes the folate. Then there's other genes like VHMT and methionine synthase. There's all kinds of genes. And again, you'd have to study this, and I'll give you some resources where you can study some more. And I just left this slide in because I wanted you to see it's in the family, this genetics testing stuff. I would like to believe a distant uncle or cousin, Marin Lascalzo, back in 2009, but I haven't looked into that to find out if we are related. So what are some of the problems that having an MTHR mutation or lack of good function of MTHFR enzyme does? Well, it creates an increase in homocysteine, because if we go back to the previous slide, homocysteine is down here. And homocysteine, if you've done any lab testing, you know that high levels of homocysteine are dangerous and predisposed to heart disease. So we want to keep our clients to have their homocysteine levels. I like to see them, you know, down around 5 or thereabouts. And 10 is actually considered on labs to be the top level of where it's safe. So when you have the homocysteine, it's got to be recycled. And when the levels of homocysteine are high, it suggests that there might be a methylation issue, because the homocysteine needs to be then converted to methionine, which then gets converted to SAMe. Okay? And so that's what we're talking about here, is recycling. So increased homocysteine, which is a predisposition to cardiac disease. So increased risk of thrombosis, et cetera, and stroke. So you also have insufficient substrate for DNA repair, synthesis, and methylation, which puts you at higher risk for cancer, because you need to have DNA repair in order to survive cancer. You also get increased risk of pregnancy, miscarriage, and it's a really common thing, and especially if both parties have this MTHFR mutation, that there's a higher risk of pregnancy, miscarriage. Also, if you're on methotrexate as a medication, which is used in treating RA and cancer, they may require dosage adjustments if you're on that, because methylation problems can affect that. Also, neurotransmitter problems. Remember, we talked about dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine. Because of some of the issues with methylation, you can have a problem with that happening. Excess folic acid can lead to problems like cancer, as can folic acid block methylfolate at the blood-brain barrier. So let's just be real clear here, because it's very common to misspeak and say folic acid when we really mean folate. Folic acid is the synthetic form of the folate, B9, vitamin B9. Folic acid is not produced in the body. It's synthetic. And I'm going to show you a pathway in a bit that shows you how it blocks methylation, how it can decrease the level of methylfolate, and how it can actually block it by producing unmetabolized folic acid and blocks the uptake at the blood-brain barrier. And then there's things that come into play, like dairy. Dairy products can block folate receptors. So some of the genes that control that are FOLR1, R2, and R3. So these are some of the problems. There's a lot more problems. Fibromyalgia is common with people with this and not expressing. So let's look at who's impacted by this. This is amazing. Approximately 45% of the population has one copy of the MTHFR C677T. And when you see something expressed that way with a letter and then a number and then another letter, it means that the cytosyl was replaced by thymosine at the 677 portion of that gene. So, interesting. So, approximately 90% of people with chronic disease have a copy of the MTHFR 677T. So if you're working with somebody who has chronic disease, fibromyalgia, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, any of these chronic diseases, they most likely have a copy of that gene. So Dr. Lynch is recommending that everybody be tested just to see so you know how to be more careful with it. So for example, I have actually two copies. I have one copy of the MTHFR 677, and I have another copy of another one called the 1298. And it's, I think about 30% of the population has that. And the interesting thing is that a lot of the problems that people have when they have these mutations, I don't have. And I attribute it to back in my 20s, assuming that I had lousy genes and really being careful. And so knowing that you have the genetic tendency is basically leverage in helping people with compliance. Okay, so that's an important thing why you'd get to test. If you have somebody who's like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, you may not need to necessarily test it, but it's good to know if they have chronic things going on so that you know how to balance and work with not just the MTHFR, but the other genes that are involved as well. And in my testing, of all the people I've looked at, I haven't seen a single one that doesn't have at least one of the MTHFRs. I've seen some that don't have the 677T, but those that don't have the 677T have either a double or a single mutation on the 1298. So it's really rare to see people without it, especially people who are going to be coming to you, right, because they're going to be having. So let's look at synthetic folic acid versus folate. They're not the same. Folic acid is only one type of folate, and folic acid is a synthetic. It's not found in nature. And there's various transformations that have to happen before it can be used. And I'm going to show you a chart in a bit that shows you why it's a really good idea to talk to your clients and your own self and your family members and look at all the bottles that you're have in there of supplements and get rid of any of them that have folic acid. If it says folic acid and it's a relatively reputable company, you might want to contact them and ask them the question. Now, don't ask them the question, is this synthetic folic acid? Ask them the question, what type of folic acid are you using in your supplement? Is it methylfolate? Is it folinic acid? Or is it truly folic acid? So they may just say, oh, no, no, it's not synthetic, not really knowing. Okay, and then the methylfolate, you see there's very little difference between them. It's just like very similar. Okay, this is the methyl group that's different. So there's different types, folic acid, folinic acid, which is 5-formyl THF, tetrahydrofolate. You'll see that sometimes. That's okay, that's an intermediate. I'll show you where that is. And the SHMT enzyme within the folate cycle produces this. And SHMT is one of those genetic things that I see quite a bit in people. And then you've got the methylfolate, which is the methyl donor that goes into and donates its methyl group to B12 and then on to SAMe. So here's the cycle, and I just wanted to show you this real quick. I don't want to get too bogged down in the biochemistry because we could spend hours on this, but folic acid that's supplemented in fortified foods and also in your supplements, your typical go to the GNC or go to Walgreens or Walmart and buy supplements there, most likely the folate in there is the B9 and there is folic acid. Okay. What happens is it needs this DHFR enzyme to move it down to dihydrofolate, okay? And the dietary folate is what comes in here. So you're bypassing it. If you're eating leafy greens or having your people eat leafy greens, you're bypassing this very slow enzyme. Now, because this enzyme is slow, things get backed up, so the folate gets converted into unmetabolized folic acid, and that can get into the system and wreak havoc. Folic acid has been associated with higher levels of cancer and blood-brain barrier problems, blocking the receptors at the blood-brain barrier, which messes up methylation in the brain. Then there's this whole pathway where it goes down to tetrahydrofolic acid, THF, and then it goes down to form this 10-formyl, which is also called folinic acid, and that's an important piece. It goes into purine synthesis, which is the nucleotides that you need to repair your DNA. Now, the other piece that you need to know is that some people have blockages in these various places. They may have blockages in the enzyme that goes from the tetrahydrofolate into the 10-formyl or the folinic acid. So some of the supplements may have multiple types of the folate, and that might be a good thing to do with people when you don't really know what their genetics are, folinic acid and methylfolate. You have to be careful by not giving people too much folate because that can disrupt a cycle we're going to look at in a bit called the COMT. So it's complicated here, and I just want you to get the gist that it's not just a matter of finding out that somebody has an MTHFR and then giving them folate, methylfolate. Some people crash and burn when you do, and that can be helped by giving them niacin or vitamin B2, but some people just don't do well, and you've got to be really careful. You see that there's other nutrients that come into play. There's B6, there's B2, there's the folate, there's B12. So this is a complex. Now, a lot of people that you just prescribe B vitamins with do really, really well, and some of them don't. Now, if you have people that do really, really well on B vitamins, more power to you. But if you do put people on B vitamins and they say they feel bad, their brain fog increases, don't just think it's all in their head or they didn't take them right. Understand that there may be some of these genetic pathways that you're going to need to look at in order to be able to properly know what the balances they need. And if, again, if you're not going to get into this in depth, finding resources and people who do understand this is really important to help your people. Okay, so the vitamins, I've listed those, an acidic environment for absorption of those nutrients. So I just gave you this list. I'm not going to go through it. You don't need to memorize it, but I just wanted you to see the complexity of folate metabolism. It's not just about MTHFR. There's all these other enzymes that are coded by genes, and people have SNPs in these genes. Like, for example, I have a SNP in the FOLR1 and 2, I am okay on this SLC1. I have a SNP in the DHFR. I have SNP in the MTHFS. I have a couple of SNPs in the MTHFD1. I have a heterozygous in the HMT, and I have two heterozygouses. Heterozygous meaning there's the yellow, the one gene good, one gene not good, and the MTHFR. So I have a lot of challenge in my folate metabolism. So I would be somebody where it'd be good to give some of the intermediates, like the folinic acid as well as methylfolate, in order to help me to get through. But before you address MTHFR, a lot of people are getting on this MTHFR, it's the biggest thing, it's the hottest thing since sliced bread, we have to address it. You really need to look at the foundational diet and lifestyle, making sure they have plenty of good leafy greens, removing all the folic acid, the synthetic folic acid, looking through the supplements, looking through the protein powders. You know, those, a lot of those medical foods have folic acid in them. So going through those and changing them out, improving the B12 status, because if you don't give B12 and you just give the folate, you can get a backup in something they call methyl trapping, where you have all these methyl groups, but the B12 is insufficient and it can't grab those methyl groups, and then you have a backup of those. And then you need to test their homocysteine levels. It would be a good idea just to see where they're at. Is their homocysteine being affected by the MTHFR or not? Then reducing oxidative stress levels, big time, because oxidative stress produces free radicals, it damages DNA, it affects the mitochondria, there's on and on. So we want to look at these pieces, look at their thyroid. Is their thyroid functioning properly? Because if it's not, then it affects their B2 levels, it affects their metabolic energy, really important stuff. And then addressing mitochondrial dysfunction. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the recommendations that Dr. Lynch had for addressing mitochondrial dysfunction. So this is your mitochondria, speak of the devil. This is what it looks like. And there's all sorts of things that affect it. Nutritional deficiencies, carbohydrate and fructose excess. How many of your clients are coming in eating too much sugar, drinking too many soft drinks, eating even things that you don't, wouldn't even think that would have sugar, that have sugar in them. Microbes are huge. You know, a lot of times we just ignore that because that's like West, we don't want to go into the Western medicine approach of, oh yeah, everything's related to a bug, just take an antibiotic and you're done. If you've got, somebody's got microbes, pathogens growing in, whether they're bacteria, candida, funguses, or parasites, it's because their terrain is allowing that to grow. So you as a holistic practitioner are going to go deep, try to figure out why do they have these parasites. So yes, you have to get rid of them. Or why do they have this overgrowth of candida or some sort of bacteria? These all play into the mitochondrial function. So xenobiotics, like hydrogen sulfate, many herbicides and pesticides, various prescription drugs, all of these play in and affect the mitochondria as well as oxidative stress. You know, you can get people off their margarine and mayonnaise and their hydrogenated fats. That takes a lot of oxidative stress off. You get them eating a lot of green leafy vegetables and bright colored vegetables with lots of antioxidants. That's going to help their mitochondrial function. And there's more. Okay. So let's look at some ways to improve mitochondrial function. These are some of Dr. Lynch's recommendations. Breathing. That goes back to the basics, right? Breathing. Most people breathe shallowly, and they're not getting a good oxygen exchange. So get them breathing. Get them doing some yoga breaths. Get them doing some heart math. Get them doing some deep abdominal breathing and breaks throughout the day to just focus on their breathing. You can have them set an alarm to do some breathing. It's going to help their energy. It's going to help their mitochondria. He also recommends a lot of raw plant and algae foods because they have a lot of the nutrients and the trace elements that are needed. Spring water is good. We can't always get spring water, so at least filtered water, not tap water. He recommends earthing as one of the possibilities, right? That's this thing. David Wolf is a big proponent of it, and he sells these little gizmos and gadgets, and I have one sitting here. I don't use it all the time, but it's basically where you're taking a little cord and you're putting it into the grounding cord, and connecting yourself to the earth. Well, obviously, that's not the best way to do it. The best way is to walk barefoot outside, because there's all this energy in the earth that we can bring into our bodies. Getting into the ocean, being near the ocean, and getting those negative ions. Reduce calorie intake. Study after study after study show that people with a reduced calorie intake below what you would think would be optimal have more longevity, have better energy. Of course, reducing oxidized food, like, you know, those fats, like fatty acids that are in a bottle, canola oil, and even things like almond oil and safflower oil, which we think might be healthy, they're actually oxidized. Exercise, not too much, not too little. Exercise and yoga. And then on the nutrient side, there's a nutrient that complex called NAD. Now, doesn't mean you go out and you just get people on this stuff, but you're looking at what is going on with their energy, and these are some of the things that you can work with them on. NAD, CoQ10, phosphatidylcholine, pantothenic acid, carnitine, ashwagandha, melatonin, vitamin E, SOD, catalase, glutathione, and selenium. These are all nutrients that have been found to improve mitochondrial function. So if you're suspicious that somebody has impaired mitochondrial function, before you jump in and try to work on which SNPs need to be addressed, get their mitochondria working, because if you start to supplement to improve the function of some of those SNPs, what you're going to end up doing is causing a backup, and the mitochondria aren't going to be able to keep up. The other thing I wanted to throw in, because there's a lot of talk about histamine in foods, and people have a lot of allergies, and there are certain foods that are high histamine foods. And you may see these websites that talk about high histamine and low histamine diet, and not everybody needs to pay attention to this. It's when they have certain genetic impairments, and there's one called DAO, diethylamine oxidase, something like that. I don't remember exactly what it stands for. After a while, you just look at the SNPs and you know what they are. So that if somebody has some of those impairments, they have to be careful about foods that have high histamine. If they don't, then they're able to break down the histamine, no problem. So aged and spoiled leftovers, alcohol, fish, pickled foods, canned foods, aged cheeses, smoked meats, shellfish, some beans, some nuts like walnuts and cashews, chocolate, citrus, wheat, and vinegar. So those are kinds of things that if you're working with people and they just keep, when they eat, regardless of what they're eating, it seems they just get these histamine-type reactions. Their eyes swell, their arms swell, their belly swells. These are some of the things to look at, and it's genetically controlled. Then we have the hormone metabolism related to genes. And again, we've got these CYPs, that's cytochrome P450, and there's various versions of that. And that's stage one liver detoxification. So phase one liver detoxification. So if some of these are off, then you're going to have problems. This is a great thing to go along with the genetic genie detox profile. So you get a general idea if they've got some of these SNPs, these CYP SNPs, that these are some of the things you want to be looking at. So caffeine and estrogen metabolism, which predisposes to breast, ovarian, and prostate cancers because you can't fully metabolize those things. The CYP1B1, caffeine and estrogen metabolism. So again, there's a lot of things that are doing duplicate effort. on that. These are the ones related to hormone metabolism. There are a lot of other CYPs out there that relate to various drugs, caffeine, alcohol, pesticides, heavy metals. The way that you would find those things right now, there's no one good source, is when you get your report from Genetic Genie, it has something called the RSID. And you look up the RSID on something like Snipedia, S-N-P-E-D-I-A, and the other one was Gene Cards, that's it. So these are some of the genes that control hormone metabolism and can cause problems with basically estrogen metabolism and buildups of those carcinogenic estrogens. So we'll move on to another SNP. And the reason I'm going with this one is because it's related to neurotransmitters and also to estrogen. And the COM-T enzyme, catecholamine O-methyltransferase, is very important for transferring methyl groups from SAM to catecholamines, and the catecholamines being dopamine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine. So COM-T, a COM-T SNP, will cause you to have variations in this and decreased function. Transfers methyl groups from SAM-E, to catecholamines. Hormones, estrogen metabolism. Transfers methyl groups from SAM to catechol drugs, like detoxifying from L-DOPA, which is a drug that's used for Parkinson's. So these are all places that the COM-T works, and it's a very complicated process. I'm trying to simplify it down so you get a general idea. This is another one from Michaeline. So all these things play in. Stress plays in. Toxins play in. And all of these toxins and stress create issues. So, for example, all of the things at the top, the CYP1B1 gene in the liver, the enzyme in the liver, but there's a SNP that causes a problem with it. It causes increase in estrogen metabolites, which can increase your risk of breast cancer. And if in addition you have decreased zinc, molybdenum, magnesium, B6, or increased cortisol or increased copper, decreased folate, decreased COM-D, you've got a problem with this and you end up with excess estrogens, which can be carcinogenic. Okay, so these are all the various things that play into the process. And then if you have gut dysbiosis or leaky gut, you have inflammation, you have insulin, that will lead to an increase in cortisol, and that will lead to pregnenolone steal, which is basically where cortisol steals all the precursors and you make less of the good estrogens and more of the problematic estrogens. And then you've got down here, you've got various things that can contribute to cancer risk, like carcinogenic estrogen metabolites, increases DNA damage, need for repair, cancer risk. Epinephrine causes increased insulin, causes increased estrogen, vicious cycle, cancer risk. Decrease in methylation, decrease in the activity of COM-T, which is a decrease in the elimination of the excess estrogens, vicious cycle leads to cancer risk. So all of these things play in. And again, it's really important to start with the basics. If you have somebody who you're working and giving all kinds of fancy supplements in an attempt to manage their SNPs, and they're not eating a good diet, and they're not breathing properly, and they're not exercising, and they're not sleeping, you're spinning your wheels. Okay? I don't like to practice allopathic herbalism, right? Allopathic nutrition, which means you give this nutrient or this herb for that symptom. That's allopathic medicine. We're looking at a functional and a holistic approach, and it's really important to do that. These are some SNPs, breast cancer risk and SNPs, a lot of them related to the cytochromes and various things like that. So I'm coming back to that slide I showed you earlier, which is we want to push estrone down the pathway to estriol, or down to the 2-hydroxyestrone. We don't want to stay at the 16, and we don't want to be at the 14-hydroxyestrones. We talked about the nutrients. Let's show you how those SNPs get involved. So there's the cytochrome P450, A1, and B1. That happens in the liver. And if those are impaired, you're going to have less of a breakdown of the estrogen. So that means the estradiol is going to build up. If you want to take the hydroxy to the methoxy, right? A methoxy is just a methylated form of that estrogen byproduct. And in order to have that COM-T functioning properly, you need SAM and magnesium. So you can see where the nutrition and these SNPs all come together to create a problem. And this thing at the bottom, which is DNA adduct, is basically an issue with problems. with deletions in the DNA, problems, damage to the DNA, which predisposes to breast cancer. And this is aside from Ben Lynch. So how is thyroid affected by MTHFR? Well, you need adequate iodine and supplemental sources to generate your T4. You need B2, thiamin, to convert iodine and tyrosine to thyroid hormones. You need other nutrients such as selenium, iron, zinc, B12, magnesium, and D3 for a healthy thyroid. You've got gluten intolerance that can contribute to thyroid peroxidase problems. And if you've got the CTLA gene, you're more inclined towards Hashimoto's. Vitamin A deficiency, BCOM, is that thing. I have that where I have a decreased ability to convert beta-carotene into vitamin A. It's a common SNP. I actually have a rarer form of it where I have double or triple SNP there. So I've just started taking vitamin A because I might as well be smart about it. Increased homocysteine, which can result from the MTHFR, leads to thyroid receptor resistance. So a lot of people you'll see have really good thyroid labs, but they have terrible thyroid function, and most of the medical doctors will just walk them off. You don't have a thyroid problem. Maybe you need Prozac. Maybe you need laxatives. Maybe you need steroids for your skin problems. They'll give them symptomatic things to treat a problem when really it's a result of thyroid receptor resistance, and that can be contributed to by vitamin A deficiency and high homocysteine, which results from the MTHFR. So you see how all this stuff is kind of linked in. And it's important to really understand how all this stuff works together. And then the adrenals are affected. Stress is huge. And blood sugar imbalances affect both the thyroid and the adrenal. And that's why in my hierarchy of approach, I look at digestion, blood sugar, and then adrenal thyroid, because you've got blood sugar imbalances. It's hard for anything to be working properly. It increases inflammation and affects the thyroid and the adrenals. We've got excess cortisol. We've got excess cortisol that increases the damage to the receptors and causes a problem with the conversion. Excess cortisol increases blood sugar and insulin, decreases thyroid function. So you see that the genes and the hormones, they're all tied together. And it's really important to understand this. So how the thyroid and adrenals are affected by MTHFR, there's something called BH4, which is a biopterin, a tetrahydrobiopterin. So I'm just going to skip over this. The first steps, let's really look at what we do. First steps are the basics, guys, the basics. So I have an MTHFR, what should I do? Okay, let me ask you about your diet. What are you eating? What are you drinking? What are you exposed to? How much stress do you have? How's your gut functioning? How much are you pooping? So all the questions that you need to ask, we go through really detail in my practitioner training programs. We have a module that's got hours of videos on how to actually do a really, really thorough intake with a person so that you know all this stuff and you know where to go. You're not going to just go to, oh, you have an MTHFR, here's methylfolate. No, you're going to talk to them about everything in their diet and help them to heal it. So hydration, antioxidant-rich whole foods, get them off the processed foods. Healthy lifestyle where they're not just sitting in front of TV sets all the time. They're out in nature. They have good relationships. Gut healing and pathogen removing, hugely important, because if your gut's not working, nothing's working. Adaptogens are hugely important to help people to manage and keep their stress levels calm. Things like ashwagandha, Siberian ginseng, Eleuthero, holy basil, things like that that are really, really good. Tulsi tea is very common in the markets now. You can just get them to have some Tulsi tea, maybe take a little ashwagandha. Certain things you have to watch out for. You have to know your various herbs, and we go through that in our practitioner training. We go through all the adaptogens and how to know which ones to give to who. Adrenal support, thyroid support, the B vitamins, all except for B12 and folate at the initial stages until you do other things, until you kind of want to be aware that you don't push pathways too much. So you start with all the basics, and then after you've gotten them on some good basics and some general B vitamins without the B12 and folate, then you can move towards getting them on those. I love this slide. This was presented when I first went to a restorative medicine conference. There was a guy named Mark Blumenthal, amazing, funny guy, and he did this whole slide presentation about our stuff, and then I saw this again in Ben Lynch's presentation. So you've got to get compliance. You've got to figure out how to get people to tune in and get compliance. I do it by setting goals and helping them to really see what's important. Chocolate cake, leading to distress and low energy versus the good stuff. So the good stuff leading to this great energy and all the great things you want in your life. So basically it's like when somebody says to you, hey, I don't have time to eat well. I don't have time to exercise. I don't have time. I don't have time. So I love this doctor's response. What fits your busy schedule better? Exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? I mean, it really hits the nail on your head. And a big piece of what you do with people is helping them to follow your instructions, right? So diet basics, you've seen this before. You probably have recommended this before. I'll quickly go over it. Gluten-free and dairy-free are critical. Dairy affects those receptors. Gluten creates inflammation. It creates havoc. It creates lack of nutrient absorption and uptake. Affects the brain, affects neurotransmitters. Need I say more? Organic as much as possible, non-GMO, lots of organic veggies, especially greens and foods rich in natural folate. If you put somebody on a huge amount of greens, like during a cleanse and they're just doing greens, and they don't respond well, small percentage of the population doesn't, they may have problems with their sulfation and their sulfur handling pathways as a result of genetics or as a result of other things. Okay, they also may have a problem with oxalate. So those are things you want to explore. So knowing that these other things can happen when you do the basics is important as well. Unprocessed foods. Fatty acid balance, hugely important in anti-inflammatory diet. Local homegrown as much as possible because they're more nutrient dense. You know they're clean. You know that you haven't put pesticides on them. Encourage people to grow sprouts in their kitchen, to grow herbs in their garden. Prepare meals at home as much as possible because you don't know what's in the food when you eat out. And then really important is finding out what they're sensitive to and eliminating it. These are your basics. These are some of the goals to restore the balance. These are some of the ways you can approach it to do the balance. I love to have people set their goals, and I was so excited to see Dr. Lynch include this on his goals, setting goals so that they can keep the end in mind and they make better decisions. You need to do a detailed health history, their diet, their exposures, their prenatal environment, what they were fed as babies, their antibiotic history. There's a lot of things to really go into. Looking at what their environment's like, looking at what their lifestyle's like, modifying their diet, modifying their lifestyle to be more supportive, cleaning up their gut, balancing their blood sugar, getting their adrenals in order, getting their thyroid. You might be thinking detoxification, handling pathogens, getting their cell membranes balanced, and that has to do with fats and phospholipids, neurotransmitters, methylation, and SNPs. All of this ties together. You don't go right to the SNPs, and this is the steps, and this is the hierarchy and the order that Dr. Lynch recommends, not to go to the SNPs right away and say, oh, you have an MTHFR, here's B12 or folate or whatever. You basically have to get the other stuff in balance, and then you use the knowledge of the SNPs to help you personalize that to them. There's some resources, mthfr.net, Dr. Ben Lynch's site, he has a newsletter, highly recommend you sign up for it if you're not already there. If you want to get the Nutrigenomics conference recordings from the two that he's done so far, very in-depth, very detailed, but it's a good thing to have in your library, and we'll help you go through that in the program because I'll kind of help you with getting started at least with it because it's pretty advanced stuff. Some of the Amy Yasko stuff is pretty good, and then the Genetic Genie where you can get the raw data analyzed.